and welcome to another edition of the Pollination Podcast. It just keeps getting better and better. In the next couple of podcasts, we're going to talk to influential creatives in the Ghanaian creative economy. I have one such person with me today on the podcast. His name is Della. I've known Della for a while, and Della is an amazing artist. Della has delved into advertising, he's done publishing, he's done painting. That's fine art, and he's done music. So stay tuned, subscribe to this channel so that you can know when we have new podcasts out, because we're going to speak to some amazing people. Okay, Charlie, Della, welcome.
Thank you.
Finally, we get to record
this. I tell you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, basically, the idea is let's just talk.
Yeah.
Let's share ideas.
Okay.
The plan is to extract information out of you so other people can benefit. Pretty much that. Okay.
Brilliant.
So, tell us about you to start with.
So I'm Della of Omega, and I'm an artist, a designer, author, and a human being.
Human being, okay.
Yes, human being.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that was an introduction, but yeah. I think it was a bit short and a bit
summarized. Yeah. So I need to go into the detail.
Go into it, every one of them.
Yeah. So how do I even? So yes, I'm a father, a husband, and I'm a very passionate being. You know, when it comes to life. And issues pertaining to sustainability, issues pertaining to faith and religion, for that matter. Sometimes I tell people I wish I lived in the 50s and 60s because then they had very relevant causes to die for,
well,
to live for than we have today. And so that at least gives us a bit of the kind of personal fabric that I or cloth that I'm cut from.
So I'm a creative and you're a creative. So Della was my mate in tech. Back in uni days, Della was doing a lot of things. We'll delve into that later. But as an artist, who are you?
I think as an artist, I would say I make a conscious, there's a conscious thing on my part to be different for the right reasons, because I think most of the times, I mean, growing up, then people used to look down upon artists because all they probably thought, which is, you know, some naivety on their part, was artists just carry pens and brushes and then draw.
Yeah.
But I feel as an artist, I curate. I curate what's happening, say, in the present. I curate what's happened in the past, and as well curate what's going to happen in the future.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's basically what I understand as being an artist, and also. Seeing things from different perspectives, so not necessarily how everybody else is seeing it, but the different sides to a story and a situation, and I'm always looking for the side that's hidden from the majority.
So every artist has a journey.
My
journey would probably start from when I was born, living in the family where people like art or enjoy art. Tell us about your journey and the things that have inspired you from when you were, or when the journey even started. Maybe you were 2, you were 3. You just want to know, what is your journey?
My journey, as far back as I remember, my journey started when I saw one of my elder brothers draw. And even that, it was kind of partial because I was still so much enthused and just fascinated by the sciences and engineering. But then it doesn't shock me much because if you take Da Vinci was an engineer, was a scientist. And so I think it's somewhere inside every artist, there's mm-hmm. science, there's engineering, there's mm-hmm. there's architecture, there's, you know, and I think art sort of as the cream on top. That's it, yeah. That sort of, you know, spice, add spice to the entire, you know, mix.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I think about age 3-4
mm.
that was when I sort of saw signs, and then my engagement with Lego bricks and all that stuff, building, and you know,
yeah.
So then that was where the whole art thing started, basically.
Okay, so let's just say that, I mean, you grew up
mm-hmm.
Doing art, in quotes.
Yes,
So tell us about the journey, like the ups and downs, because for me, it started with drawing, like you said, same thing. You see someone drawing, and you wonder, what is this?
Yeah.
And then there was the whole, I started getting interested in other things, mm-hmm. like fashion, mm-hmm. and this and that. And mm-hmm. then I'll come back and I realize, no, this is not for me. At a point, I even thought I'd be a sculptor. Okay. I mean, you know, and your journey just crisscrosses all the way till you get to a point where you realize that, okay, this is me and this is what I stand mm-hmm. for. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your journey till the point when you realized what you wanted to do. And even if, and let us know even if you have realized it, because me, that I still think I'm discovering, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so from the point where I sort of got a hold of, you know, this art thing, and then mm-hmm. understood it was part and parcel of my DNA, I was experimenting with other things like music
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
the thing I keep telling people that growing up very early on, my dad, you know, gave the television away. And yeah, for us, at that point, it was inhuman, you know.
I can imagine.
I mean, why would you take the television away from the children? Like, the TV, why would you? Yeah, yeah. The TV, because it was the big thing.
It was
the only thing. And I remember back in school when I was sitting in class with my mates, and mm-hmm. they were talking about movies, and I was just being mad. I would just imagine things like, nothing to say, and just listen to them.
Yeah.
But that helped in a way, because then it opened my mind, like really, I mean, broadened my understanding of things, and how we imagine things and dream, and you know, tried to figure out how things worked, basically. Like, I would think of how this microphone actually would, you know,
mm-hmm.
pick up voices, and how, you know, the whole mechanics and the whole, you know, blueprint behind every single thing. And that kind of home, my dad being who he was, for him, art wasn't really the thing. So that in itself was a conflict. Like, there was a conflict, you know. Every now and then, I will come back from school, and pages from my notebook are missing. And obviously, the lads drawn and giving them out to friends for other favors. And, you know, sometimes I get punished for that. You know, and because my parents were them, no, be a doctor, be a lawyer, mm. be, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, but there was a rebel in me that just wouldn't bulge through all the pressure. So for some reasons, I had to do this in hiding. And I was literally drawing everything from typical superheroes to aeroplanes, to ships.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at some point in time, my dad just had to give in, because he realized there was nothing, you know, nothing was going to literally
stop
stand in my way.
Yeah.
So my dad, I remember every now and then when we visit the harbor, my dad was used to work on a ship. So every now and then when he's back and then we visit the harbor, he would tell me to pay close attention to everything I saw there. And as soon as we got on the ship, he gets me pieces of, you know, drawing sheets to start drawing.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. So I think at that time he sort of, you know, and I would draw everything I saw. And so that actually, I think that sort of, you know, built, you know, some sort of, there was a, it actually built my skill, you know, my skill drawing things into detail, and further spread my, you know, fascination for for those machines and, you know, all that stuff.
You know, it's interesting you talked about taking the TV away, because for me, I grew up listening to the radio, and half of the time I'll be drawing.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of like you're trying to imagine what you're hearing.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember I only saw one photo of Michael Jackson, and
that was
every
it.
Other drawing I did was of Michael Jackson. You know, and that was, it's just that one photo I saw of him. So I feel like maybe we can talk about this later, but mm-hmm. but television sort of like open our minds in some way, somehow close a certain window of imagination in our heads.
I was just watching this thing on YouTube mm-hmm. the other day, and they were referring to television as the idiot box, which idiots, people watch and then turn out to become idiots. I mean television has its positive sides, but I feel because the thing is most of the time people mm-hmm. sort of conform to what they watch, and then so they, you know, but
then again, maybe it's programmed for them to conform.
Absolutely.
You see something you want to buy. So tell me, I know you worked in advertising, and that was after uni, right?
Yeah, after uni. Yeah.
Okay. So so tell us about after uni till the end of your days in advertising.
Okay.
Tell us about that period.
So there's actually, I don't know if I should say this here, but I'll say this. Yeah. I'll say this. This is your podcast. I'll say it. So there's actually a book I'm writing.
Okay.
Yeah, which is titled Uncivilized.
Nice.
And there's a chapter that's mm-hmm. on my advertising years. And the chapter is called The Hunger Man.
Charlie.
Yeah. So advertising, I think, was another school that gave me took me to another dimension in terms of my mindset, and also it showed me how tough one could become, and it was a boot camp. It was it was a boot camp for me, because I remember back in school, you know, before we graduated, I had a certain perception about the advertising industry.
Didn't we all?
Yeah, it was all cool, swift, you know, like, you know, yeah, watching
that's
all this.
Wanted to be.
Yeah, I wanted to be there, you know, like, it's the coolest place on earth. Yeah. You know, you work on ads and clients just pass them because you're smart.
Yeah.
You shop, you're creative.
And you get paid.
You get paid for that. And after work, you go have drinks and, you know, yeah. And advertising for me, really, I think, showed me another side of, you know, the world and how powerful perception is.
Yeah.
And it taught me these two keywords, perception and deception, basically.
Well, isn't that what advertising is about?
Yeah. You know, so advertising was a really thorough, you know, space. And I think that's why I built all the armor I have for today, and I never regret all the years I spent in advertising, even though some of the challenges I faced and some of the decisions I made, if I had the opportunity to go back into time to make them, I wouldn't make the same decisions. I would probably have spent less time in advertising if I had the opportunity, honestly, because I just felt most of the, and I'll be very honest and frank, I think for most of the advertisers or advertising entities here are just a bunch of conformists.
And
they don't really care about making a difference or standing out. It's all just pure rhetoric, and then let's just follow whatever, you know, happens, which is one of the reasons why we're yet to, any agency has yet to win a Lorries or Cannes.
I think I've worked in advertising for a while from a production angle, and I think that maybe I might be wrong. I think it's also because in a space where the marketing manager is the one saying yes, or in a space where the accountant has a say, the accountant of the client has a say in what the creative should be. And that's based on what they know or what they've seen on TV, and they think they're experts. I think that's also a problem, especially when they have the money and they're calling the shots, and advertising companies want to get paid.
Yeah, no, I agree. But you see, Like I said, I've always had a rebel in me. And for me, it just doesn't make sense sitting there, taking orders, and getting paid for you know, when I have a skill, I have a talent, I have knowledge in a certain, you know, area, and I need to apply that to get paid. If I work to get paid, then that's more meaningful. But yeah. When it's just, you know, having zombie tendencies and then just sitting there and then taking orders and then doing what, I mean, then I might as well just go on retirement and then, you know, But advertising, like I said, advertising taught me the bad and the good.
Yeah.
And it taught me how good I could be and also how bad I can be, you know. And so along the way, I mean, people who worked with me would tell you for certain periods, I was there, my body was there, but my heart, my spirit, my soul was out of the place. And there are some certain campaigns that I even worked on. I honestly told whoever, you know, that I didn't want to associate. At no point should they even have my name attached to, you know, because this is work that I would never, ever, you know, want to.
Your own put out.
Yeah, on my own put out, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you said something. You said it taught you how bad you can be.
Yeah.
And how good you could be. Yeah. And for me I think can as in like you can be in the moment.
Yeah.
Could as in possibility. Mm-hmm. So I mean, for me, I'm looking at it from the angle that whatever happens, you have to look at it from the lessons and what it will lead you to, the possibilities.
Absolutely.
In the future, instead of like staying put in that situation. Okay, so tell me one good thing, like as in like in one short sentence, one good thing you learned in advertising and one bad thing.
One good thing I got from advertising was to always go against the grain.
Yeah,
because then it, even though in the moment it might seem you're at disadvantage, but in the long term it would definitely pay, you know. And the bad thing it taught me was
I know you have a long list.
One of the bad things, but I'll say the bad thing it taught me generally was to conform, to be complacent.
True.
Yeah,
true.
To be complacent. Everyone is doing it and it's okay, so it's okay to run with this.
Yeah, and you're safe. Cause
yeah, and you're safe, yes. So
you're in the crowd.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us, what are you doing now? Advertising days are over. Where are you now?
Okay, so here's the thing. In advertising, I was a tool. I'm a creative.
Great.
Yeah.
I get it. Okay, so tell us about some of the projects you're working on.
So presently, I have a Fish and Plankton. Mm-hmm. Which is an independent creative publishing house.
Independent creative
publishing house.
Okay, yes. Break it down.
So it's independent because we're not being financed by any of the publishing conglomerates.
Okay.
This is money coming out of a hustler's pocket.
Yeah.
And yet we're trying everything possible to meet the standards outside. So you put our books next to a HarperCollins or a Penguin's book, and then we're fighting.
Same standard,
same standards.
Okay.
And so that's one. And basically what Fish and Plankton is doing is it says publishing, but we're doing more than publishing, because we're just creating content that is relevant to our setting, you know, the kids, the adults. There's relevant content, and it's something each and every one of us can be proud of, which definitely markets us as a people, as a society, and as a culture, and also puts our values out there, sells, you know, our values out there. So that's one thing. Then I have Hamatan Collectibles, which is another very passionate project, because
then again, what is there anything you do that isn't passionate?
Well, everything's passionate, you know. So Hamatan, basically what we're doing is we're trying to spice up the collectible souvenir space. You know, we're making souvenirs that meet the standards out there, souvenirs that when you carry to any part of the world, they're relatable. So somebody sees our souvenirs and quickly is able to, you know, draw parallels between maybe what they see in the UK, what they see in the States. Yeah. But then this is still authentic to us.
Yeah. I mean, telling our own story.
Yeah.
So these two things.
And there's and then there's the artist.
Yeah.
Yeah, the artist Beke.
So so why Danny? Before you go on,
I'll tell you what. So, in actual fact, that should be my surname.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that should be my surname. It's my great 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 grandfather's name, and it means regeneration, basically.
Interesting.
Yeah, because he was the only male. Only child actually of his dad and the male child, and the dad passed on before he was born, and back in the day they didn't even have a scans to determine the gender of the child, but dad knew it was going to be a boy and said name him Beke.
Okay.
And that means regeneration, because he knew the guy was going to
so it's an Erwin name.
It's an Erwin name.
It sounds German.
Yeah, but it was in German.
Okay.
So yeah, and the guy too was born, and he really multiplied.
Mm.
Yeah.
He had to.
He had to. Yeah.
That was his mission. Okay, great. So three things.
Yeah.
The artist.
Yeah.
The collectibles and fish and plankton.
Yeah.
I was gonna ask you why fish and plankton, the name, if you could just tell me one sentence.
So, plankton is what fishes eat.
Yeah.
And we're creating content for consumption.
Great.
Yeah. So it's all in the right environment, you know. Yeah.
But I've seen some of the stuff you've done for kids, and for me, I think that's an area that nobody's really touching, especially on this side of the world. Everything, there's content being created, but it's always adult centered, and everything is not suitable for kids and all of that. So for me, I feel like it's a great thing that you would create content for kids.
Mm-hmm.
How is it going? What are some of the challenges, etc.?
So it's been, I'll be very honest, it's been good.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's challenging.
Yeah.
In the sense that generally we don't read.
Mm.
And most of us don't encourage our kids to read. We'd rather sit behind the TV set and watch Kunkum Baja with our children and watch the other ones, with our kids, instead of getting our kids and encouraging them to read. And even for some of the parents, the thing is, they would want the kids to read on their own instead of them reading to the kids, which is a bad practice as well. But it's been encouraging, because suddenly there's been a surge in terms of the demand for this kind of material, and also parents are beginning to appreciate the quality of this, because I'm not the only one in the space doing this stuff. Yeah, you have a couple of people doing this in terms of writing for kids. But you see, the thing is, our kids are sophisticated. Mm-hmm. They've become way, way sophisticated, they're way sophisticated than us growing up.
Yeah.
So some of the stories that we had in our time need to be repackaged.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And one of the things I'd want to touch on is the whole Kokwanansi thing. This is going to be a bit controversial, but if you take Kokwanansi as a character, as a person, what's the positivity, or what's positive about it?
Well, I get where you're coming from.
You get it. And today we're complaining that we have a corrupt people, there's corruption. But Kokwanansi is a corrupt guy.
Yeah.
He's a trickster, always here. So the thing is, what I've done, or what I'm doing, is creating characters that emit project values.
Brilliant.
I mean, positive values that these kids, the kids are falling in love with the characters, and you have some of the kids wanting to be called by the names of these characters and want to do what
that's
these
good.
Characters are
that's
doing.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And was it last week? There was a themed party.
Wow.
Yeah, and for one kid, and the one of my characters actually was the theme.
That's
for the party.
Instead of like a Superman or something.
Instead of like, or like a Barbie thing. Or like a Dora or, you know. And the thing is, parents are even now buying these books for... as birthday gifts for the kids in these, you know, spaces.
I feel like as creatives, this is our responsibility. Where you can, in a space where you can create, be happy with what you've created, and it goes and creates positive changes.
Absolutely.
In people. Yeah. Okay, great. Let's talk about Harmattan Collectibles.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Harmattan Collectibles is it's an amazing space too as well for me because then we get to see Ghana. Yeah. In a different light.
Yeah.
I've always said this, that one of the things I have, as I've grown, I have learned, is to talk less and act more. Because at a point I was so appalled. If I think, I don't know if it's the right word, but I forgive me, or whoever's listening to this, forgive me for... But you know the woman, the Akwaba woman with the calabash?
Yeah, that particular one.
That particular woman. Overused. She's an amazing woman.
Yeah.
Lovely woman. But it got to a point I had seen this thing too many times. And I was like, isn't there any other thing we could do? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And...
and it was on postcards, it was on calendars.
Everywhere. It was at the airports. It was... there's a dress.
Yeah.
I saw a woman wear like a dress, a flowing dress with the woman on it. I was like...
yeah, that's Ghana.
That's Ghana, you know. But I felt that, look, if people are collecting postcards, are collecting posters all over the world, and these things are like souvenirs... memorabilia, like very, I mean, these are collector's items.
Yeah.
And you come to Ghana and we don't have a representation of these things. And you go to some of the gift shops, the postcards there are fading and horrible pictures now, you know, photographs not well taken, taken by amateurs. And these things are supposed to sell Ghana. I mean, for me, it was appalling. And being a designer, an artist, I said, look, no, I would rather not complain about this any longer, but do something about it. And so I said, okay, let me start with Harmattan. So we started with the mugs.
Yeah.
The mugs that had, you know, some of the tourist, you know, locations.
Yeah, those, yeah.
Drawn on them. And then we moved from the mugs to postcards, to posters, and... we have about 10 key items right now, you know, which...
I mean, for me, so there's this whole agenda about branding Ghana.
Yeah.
And we're not going to talk a lot about that because we can talk like forever.
Yeah.
But I feel like Harmattan Collectibles is one piece of that puzzle.
Thank you.
You know, because then somebody takes one piece... to their country, and it's a very, very positive outlook of what Ghana is, instead of the whole going to art center and buying those things over and over and over again.
Yeah,
and I believe that, I mean, maybe I hope somebody from the government is listening, but the thing is that the artist can tell our story, we can tell our story, but it's not about the oil and the gas and no. Those things can't really do anything for us now.
It will get finished.
Exactly. Especially in the time when people are coming back to Africa, coming back to Ghana. Mm-hmm. How are we telling our story? And for me, that's why I the first time I saw them, for me, that's what struck me. I was like, this is beautiful, because I'd rather give this to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and you know those times when somebody travels, they bring you this lousy t-shirt.
Yeah.
I love New York and stuff like that. And some way, somehow, we love them. But these ones are better, you know. And I would want to travel with this and give them as souvenirs to other people,
you know.
Anyway, so let's just go on. Let's talk about, what did you talk about now? Let's talk about the artist.
Yeah. So, you know, it's always been my dream to like draw and or do art that sort of speaks to very sensitive, you know, issues. And like I said, as artist, art is one aspect of art is curating. And if I have to define art, basically it's art validates perception.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so... there are certain perceptions that I believe as human beings we carry. As an artist, I carry a couple of these perceptions, and these depictions are supposed to just validate these perceptions I carry. So whether they be political, social, economical, all that stuff, be faith, religion, all of that, I feel that one of the best ways to convey these messages, and I tend to depict them or portray them in a certain manner,
yeah,
and in a certain style. For me, the other thing is to be as unique as possible, so wherever these pieces are or wherever my depictions are, people can identify who is behind them. Yeah.
Let me ask. So, did advertising? I mean, I always go back to advertising because I feel like that was your boot camp.
Yeah.
What's the impact of advertising on the artist?
I think it's it builds the ability to portray perceptions much better.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So if advertising is most advertisers or entities in the space are conformist and I'm anti-conformist, then it gives me a stronger resilience towards conformism and makes my message more blunt and more elaborate, basically. Yeah.
Okay, so let's assume you're in a gallery and you're showing your work, mm-hmm, and somebody's standing then is looking at your work, and you have the opportunity to whisper a sentence to them.
Mm-hmm.
What would you whisper to them?
Probably distasteful.
Why?
I'll tell you what. So there was this piece. Yeah, this piece that I sold is one of the pieces, one of my large pieces that I sold, and it's 66 kilos.
Mm.
Yeah, that's the title of the piece. And as I was hanging that piece in the space, a man from nowhere came and he said, "This work is terrible." And I was like, "Really?" He said, "Yes, it's very terrible." And I asked him why. He said, "Because you're saying so many things in there that are true and revealing."
Mm.
You know, he didn't mean terrible as in it was a bad piece.
As like it was bad.
It was strong. Like the message, the message there was strong.
Yeah.
And he loved it. He actually told me, "I love it. I wish I could buy this."
Mm-hmm.
And even get one of my brothers who's a renowned painter to see this piece.
Yeah.
But he kept using the word terrible. Now, I love this reaction because that is what I wanted people to feel. And why I say distasteful is because when it's sweet, there's the likelihood for people to forget.
Of course.
But when it's a sour, experience, then there's always the tendency for people to remember. And what I curate, I want people to have in their minds for the rest of their lives. So I'll say distasteful because I don't go out there, or I don't put these things out there for people to fancy them in the common way.
Yeah.
You know, where everybody's like, "Oh, it's a wonderful," mm-hmm, it's wonderful, and then they just walk away after, taking a few sips of wine in it. But I wanted to leave a mark of some sort.
Impact.
Yes.
Impact.
Major impact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so you mentioned the word distasteful. You said rebellious, and I'm beginning to even reevaluate myself as an artist. I mean, because I do that every time, and you realize that if there's any field that should speak to people and change people's perceptions, is art.
Yeah,
and I believe that maybe as artists we become a bit slack in doing that, because then there's so many things going wrong and not just like as in like the visual arts, talking about like music, etc. What are we singing about? What are we filming? What are our films talking about? We're talking about things and we are conforming.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And then we go back and complain about the politicians doing this. But these are the same things that we're portraying in our films, in our music. Absolutely. And how do we expect to change?
Absolutely.
You know? So I believe that, I mean, if there's anything I take away from this, the fact that as artists, we need to become rebels.
Absolutely.
That's our mandate. I mean,
I think it takes a rebel to be an artist.
Well, then again. Yeah. Then again. So I mean, every rebel, well, not every rebel could be an artist, but then every artist should have a rebel in them.
And that's rebellion what keeps inside you. Them.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about, talking about rebelliousness, let's talk about the education system in Ghana. I mean, you and I went to tech.
Yeah.
And I did an interview some years back, and I told them as it is. I mean, because I feel like 4 years, I didn't learn anything.
Yeah.
I just had to struggle and get some mark and a degree so that I'll bring home and show to my mom and say, hey, I got a degree.
You didn't waste your money after all.
Exactly. but this is something, I mean, we left school some years back and the same system has produced more people.
Yeah.
And when they get out of school, they have to unlearn everything before they can actually live. Or then they end up getting sucked into the advertising system or another system for that matter, and then they wither. What do you think we can do to change this?
Look, honestly, the asbestos didn't help. That asbestos.
If you both understand what you're
saying. I mean, I think for those there now, they might probably but for us, you know, that I call it the asbestos clad, you know. And it's a conformist society, honestly. Yeah. You know, conformist society with conformist corridors and chambers and you name them. And tech in itself was a war for me because I walked into tech and I had expectations.
Yeah.
It was 20%. It was 20% education and 80% miseducation.
Yeah.
You know. And then again, it was a typical, you know, setting us up for the mass production line.
I like the word, setting us up.
Yeah, setting us up for the mass production line, you know, just to become like everybody. Breaking the light bulb and then giving us the caps to wear with our matriculation.
I know.
You know, and all of that. And I, for the 4 years, I made a conscious effort to consistently wick myself.
Yeah.
You know, that you're here for the paper. I don't even know where the certificate is even lying at this point in time.
I think I know where mine is.
I don't know where mine is lying, honestly. And, I think at a certain point, I might just have to call on you guys to prove that I was part of, you know, and that's, you know, that's sad. I mean, that's sad. I think every special ability is either suppressed or killed there. So it's some form of a killing field.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they use the manure for. Those
green books.
Yeah, you know, and coming out of tech, I mean, it was what I learned that was different from what I came to see out there in the real world. And if you don't have the heart and the soul, I mean, that's it. You get lost.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I mean, for me, honestly, it's amazing how people like you and we were cool. It was as if we're able to identify, some of us were able to identify ourselves. I could see you and I could see, look, this is a guy who has something special and unique.
The rebel.
And is a rebel. Yes, there's a rebel in you, you know, and you identify the rebel in me and a few others.
Yeah.
And I'm not surprised that we've been able to come out of that space and fight our way to like where we are. Yeah. So the educational system for me is bullocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like we need to do something about it. But then how do we do that, you know? For me, this podcast is even one of the ways I think I can change that. Because then people like you can come and talk and then change the perception of these little ones who are very creative on the inside. Trust me, I've met young people who are amazing, mm-hmm. like you're amazing, and super, they have ideas, exactly. Yeah. But then they tell you, okay, so I'm going to tech, I'll be back in 4 years. I'm like, oh no. And then they come back and
dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dead, like gone.
Zombies, I know. Anyway.
No, I think you see, when it comes to education, I think it's time for some of us to make people understand how mm-hmm. irrelevant degrees are, the papers are.
Yeah.
Cause honestly, if you have your degree and you get into a certain setting and it's competitive
mm-hmm.
and you can't live there, you get kicked out.
Of course.
With your degree, your first class.
Of course.
You still get kicked out.
Yeah.
The world needs solutions.
Exactly.
So if people can be in their homes and find a way to mm-hmm. deliver solutions, then that's it. For me, that's the pinnacle of success.
Yeah. Two things just came to mind. So I heard that I think it's in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They tried the 4-day work mm-hmm. week where mm-hmm. instead of going to work from Monday to Friday, people went to work from Monday to Thursday.
Yeah.
And then they realized that productivity
mm-hmm.
Was increased by 40%.
Absolutely.
There's something in there that we need to look at. I mean, look at countries like Rwanda. Anyway.
Yeah.
And then also look at the banks in Ghana, the banking system in Ghana. Mm-hmm. Most of our friends ended up becoming bankers.
Yes, designers became bankers.
Exactly. Yeah. And now the banking system has, should I say, failed them. Because then what they thought it was, or what we all thought it would be, is not what it is.
No.
Yeah. And we're a country that should thrive on innovation.
Absolutely.
You know? So
It's a university of technology.
Yeah, yeah.
Technology.
Anyway. Let's move on to Brighton.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about you, your personal philosophy. Let's get a bit personal.
Mm-hmm.
What drives you?
What drives me? Existence.
Mm.
I feel purpose.
Yeah.
These keywords like purpose, legacy, existence, which is life. Man cannot be here for just being here.
There's a reason.
And I believe I wasn't brought here to eat, sleep,
And procreate
and then die.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
So I came here for a purpose, and I am now at this point in my life, I strongly believe I'm fulfilling that purpose.
Mm.
And that is me. Like every day I wake up, once I'm alive by God's grace, I know then there's more to do, there's more work to be done, and I have to continue fulfilling that purpose. And then when God willing that purpose is fulfilled, then there's a legacy.
Yeah.
And then that legacy too has its impact
mm-hmm.
that it would make for others to carry the torch and then continue.
It said that leadership is about legacy. I mean, if you're a good leader, you leave a legacy. Yeah. So I feel like, so I would say every artist should have a rebel in them.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, as an artist, you should know that you're called to lead in a particular field.
Absolutely.
And that is directly linked to your purpose, so that you can't be caught up in the system and be doing 9 to 5.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing 9 to 5. We're not saying that. But all we're saying is you should make the difference.
The 9 to 5 is wrong. It's slavery.
Well,
it's slavery that's been sugar coated
mm-hmm.
and colored.
But think about this: what if you're caught up in a 9 to 5 mm-hmm. that allowed you to create?
But these 9 to 5s here, they don't allow you to create. No, you see, the thing is, conformism is when you have stringent structures.
Yeah,
it's not like I don't believe in structures and organization, but human beings are supposed to be flexible.
Yeah.
And even sometimes when you take the weather, there are times when the sun doesn't show up too early.
Yeah.
There are times when the moon spends some time mm-hmm. in the bathroom mm-hmm. before, And my thing is, like you mentioned this thing about work and then productivity. Most of the time, I'm productive
mm-hmm.
at night.
Yeah. Yeah.
My productivity levels are on high at night. Yeah. When you put me out there in the day, a whole lot of things are bombarding me. Yeah. Like there's noise pollution, there's all that stuff.
I understand, yes.
And true. I can't maintain. Like yeah. I'm always in a, I mean, it's a straight jacket. you get it. And the thing is, for me, this is the thing. If I can do everything that I have to do for today in mm-hmm. 2 hours.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
Yeah, I get you.
The extra hours.
You can move on to another project and think of something, build something new. I mean, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I don't know when this country will get there. I mean, because think about it. People will spend 2 hours in traffic
mm-hmm.
getting to the office.
Yeah.
And when they get to the office, they're tired. So they need to relax a bit. They probably go buy wache or something, come and eat. And they start work at 10.
Yeah.
And when they start work at 12, there's mandatory lunch that they have to go to. And then they go to lunch and they come back at 1.
Mm-hmm.
And at 1, their productivity level is like
because the
0.
Food has to digest.
Yeah. And then they pick up at 3:30. Okay, let's do some work. Oh, no, but we have to close at 5.
Close at 5, yeah.
And then the same thing repeats over and over again. Yeah. And meanwhile, if you apply for a job and want to be a consultant or a freelancer, they go like, no, you have to be in the office. But sit in the office and do what when there's no work to be done anyway.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's something that we might probably even talk about later on another edition.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
So, I'm an artist.
Yeah.
I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
And I'll say that everywhere.
Yeah.
Because I feel like whatever I am or whatever I've been able to achieve is because of God.
Absolutely.
What role does God play in your life?
God, okay, so let me be illustrative here.
Yeah.
So God is a capsule, mm-hmm. right? And I'm somewhere in that capsule, basically. So I'm inside God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never heard it said like that. That's very vivid.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel like artists are prone to go wayward.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because some of us are not able to control the rebel in us. So then our tendencies are usually not the regular tendencies everybody mm-hmm. has. Because I believe that's also a source of power for every artist or every creative. Because mm-hmm. some way, somehow, we are like God. And I say that loosely.
Absolutely. You know, no, because, I understand.
Because we create.
There's an attribute of God inside us.
Exactly. Yeah. And when an artist stops creating,
that's
pretty good.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, so quick one. How do you work?
How do I work?
Your thought process.
Okay, so sometimes I'm sleeping and I just wake up all of a sudden because I need to put something down.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, when you come to my home, my workspace is quite messy because there are pieces of papers all over the place with, you know, notes on them and that sort of thing, because every now and then there's something coming up, there's something hitting me, there's some idea, there's a picture in my head, I'm thinking of some theme to work on and all that stuff. But honestly, I would have a concept, I would have an idea, which is a typical routine, and put it down on paper and then begin to work it out on the computer or whatever medium available. It could be music, it could be a poem, it could be an idea for a postcard, could be an idea for a mug, anything basically.
Two things.
Yeah.
Music.
When I mentioned it, I knew you were going to go there.
Definitely. So tell us, like, in one paragraph, has the music journey been like? And has the journey ended?
No.
Okay.
But the journey of being a rapper is over. Because what I felt was, you know, at the time when I was doing my rap thing, I think Ghana wasn't ready for the kind of year, honestly.
Yeah.
And I can say this for a fact, because I think till today, when I play my mixtape, my first mixtape and I tell people that I did this in 2009, they don't believe it. Yeah. And so I feel at that point I was at a point where people I think people are now, not to disrespect anybody, but people are now at that level. And even when it comes to even production, like producing stuff, I don't think many people really appreciate, you know, sound as much as I still do appreciate it. But then I'm still doing music. There's a lot of interest towards the jazz. So I have a couple of jazz. I did one I released a couple of years ago. It was No Greater Love.
Okay.
And it was Christian.
Nice.
Basically, so I had some of the very popular Christian songs done, and I also composed some new Christian songs as well. Yeah. And the last thing I worked on was a soundtrack for an art exhibition that I'm planning towards. Yeah. And so the music journey is still on. It's God willing, it's going to get better and bigger. Yeah. But then the rap is done.
Oh, why?
Charlie, with this gray hairs in, on the stage with these small boys.
I know, I know. Charlie, no. You should actually give us a freestyle right now.
I beg.
Two bars, four bars.
I haven't. Charlie, I haven't rapped since when? Since 2012.
So we should do it now. Just.
I don't even know.
A few lines.
I don't even know. Okay, I had this rap thing. I wrote, it was a song, 1957. And it says, it goes like this. I'm a slave of the Danes, Portuguese, and Dutch. From the chains on my wrist to the whips I grabs. It's amazing my old man sold me for starch, gunpowder, tobacco, reflections on glass.
Have you recorded that?
I think I have a recording. It's lying somewhere.
Should let me listen to it.
I would send it to you.
Charlie, one last thing.
Yes, sir.
I know people say this in interviews. What are you leaving us with? What are you going to tell the young people? But I mean, just tell us something, because the last thing that should resonate, I mean, when people listen to this podcast, what is that thing that you would tell anybody who listens to this podcast?
I had a conversation with a young man yesterday who's he should be about 20, and there was one thing I told him. I said every generation lives for a cause. What cause is this generation living for? Because when I look at them, honestly, they're clueless bunch.
True.
Like clueless. People are just taking decisions and doing things with no clue of, you know. And I told them that, look at yourself today. And I don't care what it is, whether there's a voice in your subconscious, and that voice is telling you of your past or things you've been through in terms of abuse. And I told him, look, I have had my fair share of abuse growing up. But would I allow that to dictate or shape my future? No.
Definitely not.
Human beings are not worthless. We have so much value, and this is based on how much I feel God put into the making of man. You understand the investment. So if God has invested so much in you, why would you allow all that investment to go to waste? So look for a cause that you can champion and pursue that would shape your generation and generations to come.
Yeah, impact, leadership.
Yeah.
Dela, thank you very much.
Thank you, Nana.
It's been a pleasure.
Same here.
I'm sure we'll do this again.
Please, I'd want to be back.
Sorry. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, bro.
All right. So there you have it. Like I said, Dela's an amazing person, and I had an awesome time talking with him. I really learned a lot from this interview. This is just a reminder to subscribe to this channel and follow our page on Instagram, The Pollination. That's the.pollen.nation. Nation. And just so you know, all the songs you've heard in the background of this podcast are from The Less Project. This podcast is brought to you by NKACC, a creative agency based in Accra, which I'm the creative director of. And there's a little bit just to improve the creative industry in Ghana. Thank you. See you another time.